Sissoko finally waited. Eriksen low, great ball into the middle. What a save by Heaton. Tonight's Davison Sanchez, Lucas Moura, and belted into the net. Brilliant goal. On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London. That is absolutely incredible on debut. Aurier! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier!
First time here to Son. Kane. Good area for Spurs. And Kane's not afraid to shoot. Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane. That is exceptional. Lamella will try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamella. Never afraid to take on a shot. And with good reason.
Terry in the Burnley back line. And Son breaks forward. Oh, wow, what a run. Yunmin Son from inside his own half has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs career.
Welcome back to another episode of the Touchline Hotspur podcast. We've got a strong cast this week. Yao's got his card. Dave's got his card. Spurs not playing midweek. Spurs haven't lost in a week. Life is good. Is that right, lads? Life is good? Yeah? Listen. Let's do some intros. Yao, how you doing, man?
I'm fine. I'm happy that the barbers are open, so I got a little trim. Still need a shape up, but it's more respectable now. Yeah. Obviously, it's good to be back on the podcast with you guys, and we'll get to discussing our good old Spurs.
Yeah. Owen, what are you saying, man? How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Just come back from a little bit of real life football. Dead leg, but got a win, and yeah, just here to talk about our happy chirpy Spurs.
Yeah, so what, were you the Gareth Bale of the team this evening or not?
Scored my right foot, so yeah, no. Ah, okay. Which is my weaker foot, actually.
Okay, fair enough. Dave, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. I had a football game today as well. 2 goals, yeah? Left and right. Don't worry about it. I'm actually more excited about the fact that I think I might start a Twitter account for the number of days since number 2 played for our club, because it's increasing very nicely. And I ain't seen him in a while, so my hopes are up.
Yeah, number 2 is interesting because I think he's been injured for a while, but even fit now with, what is it, 3 games left? I can't even remember how many games he played. I think it's 4 games left. We don't want to see them, man, touch a football pitch for us for the rest of this season, innit? So speaking of number 2, let's actually talk about the actual number 2 that played for us on the weekend. Let's start off with our recent game to Sheffield United. Before I even get into specifics, let's just do a round the room sort of discussion. What was everyone's predicted scoreline before a ball was kicked?
I thought we were going to lose 2-1, to be honest.
To Sheffield United?
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah, he did say that last week.
I did.
I know you did, but like, come
did.
On. I was giving you an opportunity to change, man. What the hell?
Live and die by the sword, my friend. But yeah, it was. So I thought we were going to get caught doing too much again. I thought Sheffield United would kick on. They beat Brighton the game before. They don't really have to play with any pressure. Yeah, but they just didn't turn up at all.
Dave?
I don't know what I predicted last week. It might have been 3-1, but I did think.
Let me change the question a little bit. When you saw the lineup, what did you think the score was going to be? Because I feel 3-1. Like 3-1, yeah? Yo?
Yeah, I saw a mistake.
Yeah, pretty much siding with Dave on this one. Even during the week while I was being asked by people, I had it as 3-1 victory. I didn't see us losing. I thought it'd be just a repeat of the scoreline at their ground, pretty much. And I didn't see us keeping a clean sheet, which was nice to see.
Man, I think I must have been the only one who predicted us to get a clean sheet. I didn't think it was going to be a battering. Well, I knew we were going to dominate the game in open play, but I didn't think it was going to be a battering from a scoreline point of view. But there was no way on earth we were going to let this team score again, man. Like, They are gash, man. They are terrible. They're absolutely terrible this season. But, I mean, us running out 4-0 winners. I'm going to start with you on this one, Owen. Your favourite guy, man. Gareth Bale. Hat trick. That's 9 goals in the league this season. I think he's only had
9 starts.
Is it 9 starts he's had? Jeez.
Like, even so, it's very respectable. I can't lie.
Yeah, talk to me, man. Were you impressed with his hat trick? And yeah, talk to me about his hat trick and then talk to me about your thoughts on Bale as a whole this season. Because I feel like it's a recurring discussion we have, but we have to have it. Because every time he scores, the propaganda is going to go up and up and up. Oh, Bale this, Bale that. So let's hear it, man.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of propaganda recently, like of loads of people wanting to keep Bale. A lot of people were saying, you know, they didn't really want to make a caveat for the performance given that it was Sheffield United. But Bale was aided by what I saw from us in regards to an actual organised press. I thought we were actually able to do an organised and aggressive press purely because Sheffield United just didn't have that potency up front. So I saw the fullbacks winning the ball quite a lot, and thus Bale was able to kind of stay inside and receive the ball in dangerous areas while we sustained pressure. But given that Sheffield United was so poor, that obviously allowed him to get the ball as much as he did and be as effective as he was. As I say, like with I don't think we would have been able to play that way against a more established side. I think if we tried to play that way against a top half side, honestly and truly, I think we would have got overrun and beaten quite easily. But I mean, yeah, credit to Bale in the sense that you can only really beat what's in front of you. I mean, I'm trying to think now, has Bale scored against a team in the top half this season? I don't think he has. No. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, yeah, it's one of those. Like, I think he can be effective in these games where we can guarantee sustaining pressure and keeping the ball. And, yeah, his finishes were good. But overall, his performance, I wouldn't trust it against a more established team. It was just aided by the Sheffield United essentially not turning up, in my opinion. I'm trying to. It did stir me a bit, in the sense of, you know, should we keep him on another year? Now, I can't lie, it did edge me towards me wanting to keep him on another year, but only kind of using him sparingly against these kind of teams, and only if we can kind of facilitate him playing more centrally. If someone like Aurier, for example, holds it down on the right hand side with for the width. So yeah, I mean, it was an okay performance. Like, it was effective. It was against a poor team. Yeah, fair play to him.
See, I thought he played really well and took his goals very, very well. I mean, the first goal was a great finish, but like you said, you have to take the opposition into account. You really do. Dave, I'm going to come to you next on this one. Similar question to Owen. Like, you got all the same propaganda propping up again. Gareth Bale, should he stay? Should we keep him? Is he worth the 240k a week that we pay him or whatever? What's your take on Bale? And is he someone that at this point in time we have to keep in this? We have to keep or try and retain for next season, or is it a case of us sort of moving on and trying to get some new blood there?
When he signed, I said to my friend, I said, he's actually a Real Madrid fan. I said to him, if we get 15 goals out of Bale, I think that's decent enough. He hasn't played football for 2 years. He's been in and out with injuries. He's been on the golf course, obviously, you know, all the jokes. So I thought to myself, you know, 15 goals and you know, that's decent enough. And I think once he got going, we're seeing that he thrives in playing in a team that's playing on the front foot. He's not the Gareth Bale of old. He hasn't got his pace that he used to have. He's got a little bit of acceleration, but he's not going to beat a player down the wing 8 times out of 10. So you need to play further up. And, you know, what we saw at the weekend, and the reason why he scored against lesser opposition is because, obviously, under the old manager, those were the only times where we pushed up the pitch. If you're playing with your, you know, your centre-backs on the edge of the box, Højbjerg on their toes, by the time Bale gets the ball in his own half, all he can do is kind of like the long passes or whatever, which, you know, he's decent enough at, but that's not what we want from him. You know, he's not like Son, who can get the ball and head down. He's going on a run. He's not like Mora, who's going to put pressure on your back line by running directly at you. So you need to play further forward. So depending on who we get in as a manager, if they're going to play a system that is progressive, that is a bit more, you know, higher up the pitch, then he can be useful. But I don't want to pay him 240k a week.
Yeah, I think
the money to go out and buy a player who will give us 15 to 20 goals a season from the right hand side. I don't think we necessarily got that money. So yes, let's keep him, but we might have to look at the finances and check your pockets, brother, because
yeah,
a lot of money to put down on a player who also can get caught with injuries.
Yeah, yeah, and not just can get caught with injuries, also he's not going to get any better. He's still got quality in that boot, in that left peg of his, but this is what we get. This is as good as it gets for Bale, really. So yeah, I'm coming to you next on this one as well. I want to get everyone's take on it. I know we're basically talking about the same thing over and over again, but my thinking is Spurs should move on and try and get some new blood in that position that can nail down that position long term. Even if it means that we may take a hit in terms of productivity in comparison to what Bill would offer us, at least we had someone there long term. But then on the same discussion, I think Bale should still be an option. If we can't get a new right winger, if we can't get a fresh, young right winger who can nail down that spot in years to come, I wouldn't complain if Spurs made a move for Gareth Bale and he was at the club next season. What's your view?
This might sound a bit controversial considering I have been on Bale's case all season. But to be honest with you, I think the fact that we got first refusal or something like that to loan him out for a second season. And then the season after that, he'll be a free agent.
Mm.
Kind of works in our favor. And in a weird way, we don't really lose positioning by taking the option to loan him out for a second season. Because basically this season was his get fit season, if you want to consider it that. So for the majority of the season, he was basically getting up to speed. And I guess what we're seeing now is probably him near what he might produce for the remainder of the season, maybe even going into next season. If we took the option of having him for a second season, we probably may get a bit of a better production, but that depends on whether the manager that comes in plays Bale in a role that I would deem to be more of a free role, where we don't really restrict him to a positional sense and just basically say to him, look, float around, you know, the final third of the pitch and basically impact the game the way you can best. With that being said, if we did take him on for a second season, yes, I know money-wise, there's been a lot of talk that Spurs is a bit cash-strapped. And obviously his wages will be quite high. But after that, he becomes a free agent. And I think, you know, if we took him on for a second season and he became a free agent, he would probably want to come to us for a pay cut, you know, because I don't think anyone's going to pay him maybe the amount that he wants to be paid. And if he doesn't want to come to us, he's probably going to just go, I don't know, MLS or something like that, just to get some sort of like pay packet. So there's a lot of more positives in taking Bale on for a second season than there is not taking him on, because I don't really feel we lose much in taking him on for a second season. If it doesn't even work out in terms of the loan side of things, like I said, he becomes a free agent and we can still go and get a youngster in that role later on.
I think there's valid cases for both sides, but that makes sense, to be honest. So what if his contract is up? Let's say hypothetically we keep him next, or we retain him for next season, and his contract is up at the end of the season. What is that? Do you explore the option of getting him on a free transfer? Or do you say, "Yep, that's it, sayonara, you served your purpose"?
I think I always sit on the what he'll be what this season will turn him. Next season will turn him 32.
So he's 31 now. He's going to be 32.
I think okay, so he'll be 32 by the time he's a free agent. And we're saying, what, give it a season. So if we have like a whole season of a 32-year-old Gareth Bale, let's say he's completely done. I'm speaking hypothetically, but
sorry,
let's say
he'll be 33, sorry, by the time he's a free agent.
Okay, so he'd be 33 by the time he's a free agent. So, okay, let's say hypothetically he's done footballing-wise in terms of like his legs and all that kind of stuff by, say, 35, 36. So he's like, we're really at the like tail end of his career. It's all coming down, basically. It's all decline from this point on. I don't see no harm in taking on a reduced-priced Gareth Bale, even if he retires at our club. I don't see no harm in that because of the quality in his ability is undeniable. Now, again, it comes down to the manager in terms of like how he's used and all of that kind of stuff. But the only example I can give would be United with Cavani. A lot of people are like, he's too old. How is he going to cope with the pace of the Premier League? No Cavani in this United squad. You know, Cavani has really shown people that his quality speaks for itself. Yeah, he may not have the same pace and, you know, absolute violence that he used to have back in the day, but he's still, you know, a quality footballer. And I think that's what we could kind of get with Bale. Maybe not in the same same vein, but I think we could get something similar to that with Bale. And at this...
Is he gone? Is Yar gone? Is that just me?
No, I think he
lost him.
You lost him? No, he lost. Okay, so we'll wait for Yar to come back. But,
good point on Cavani, yeah.
So, I've said I wanted Cavani at the start, to be honest. Like, I think with players like Gareth Bale and Cavani, like, you don't... Players of that caliber, they don't just lose their quality. Do you get what I'm saying? They don't just lose it. So...
Am I back?
Okay, cool. First and foremost, yeah, let me just say Bun Bell, because obviously I'm talking nicely about him, and so he's messed up. Yeah, so ban him. I want him back at Madrid. That nonsense, you can't be messing with Mazraga like that.
But honestly, moving off Gareth Bell, then I'm talking about the performance itself. Like you alluded to Owen that, like, because of the opposition that able to sort of push high up, I'm not sure if my internet is still okay, but yeah, we're able to push high up. Do you feel as if the fullbacks benefited from the level of opposition? Because I don't know about you lot, but I felt that it was a much improved performance from Serge Aurier and Reguilon. So Dave, actually, I'm going to come to you on this first. What are your thoughts on the fullback performances on both sides?
Yeah, you're totally right. They pushed on. I think it's clear to see that Sheffield United, without Chris Wilder and the kind of innovation that he had to kind of cover some of their flaws, once you get past their first press, it's you know, it's open season, really. And it's a good game to end for me. Once we went like 2-0 up, I was like, right, fill your boots now, lads. Like, let's just go for it, because it's a nice chance to get some confidence before the last four games or whatever. And I was very impressed with Regs, because he's not been great over the past few weeks. He still had a few shaky moments. But power Serge Aurier, my gosh, he looked like a man reborn. I haven't seen him play that well since the Man United game. I think what for me... It's clear that he's developing some sort of relationship with Gareth Bale in terms of, you know, some of his he got two assists, didn't he? Just the weight on his pass, the IQ to kind of hold off on his runs, that kind of thing. We don't see a well-rounded performance from him. I feel like when he plays well, it's usually one thing or the other. You know, he's great attacking, but then defensively he lets us down. He didn't have much to do defensively, but I felt like he was getting some real good positions, making very smart decisions, got the two assists. And to be honest, if it all wasn't to the same person, I think Aurier would have been man of the match.
I think I think he played really well, but yeah, again, you got to take it with a pinch of salt because of the opposition.
It's championship.
Yeah, you know what, Owen, I'm coming to you on this. What did you think of the midfield pair, the midfield pairing, though? Because it's clear to see that Ryan Mason wanted to go all out attack on this one, like very attacking and offensive lineup because of the opposition we had. We needed to get back to winning ways, and we needed to get back. We needed to win emphatically, but obviously, midfield pairing of Højbjerg, who seemed to be like the only defensive-minded midfielder of the lot, and then you had Lo Celso starting in his third consecutive game under Ryan Mason, and then you had a random first start for Dele Alli. Like, what were your thoughts on the latter two's performance on that game? And do you feel like their inclusion was justified?
For this game, yeah, but yeah, you're right. It is very interesting because it's essentially the second game in a row that Ndombele has had 0 minutes as well. So it's interesting to see what Ryan Mason's thinking is with that. The balance looked a bit lopsided when I first saw the lineup. I can't lie. Last time I saw Lo Celso play in the pivot, I think it was, funny enough, against Sheffield United away last year when we got completely overran at Bramall Lane. But luckily for him, he had a much improved performance. He showed good energy around to help protect Højbjerg when he needed to. Like, I don't think he really overcommitted that much. Dele was doing this thing tenacity wise as well. Like, it was good to see him get those kind of fitness minutes. Because not everything he did necessarily came off, but I felt like he was very decent in deeper areas when he got close to Lo Celso and Højbjerg. Midfield balance, I can't see it being a thing going forward, to be honest. I think it was just one of those for Sheffield United where you can make those kind of assurances. You know they're not. I thought they would do a lot better, to be honest, but they just didn't turn up just to play a much more forward-thinking lineup and keep the energy in there. I'd like to see how he uses Ndombele and what the rest of the midfielders in the next games, because we've got Leeds next. So I can't see him starting that same midfield for Leeds, because really and truly, I think we'll just get peppered. But yeah, it did the job on the day against Sheffield United.
I'm glad you said it, to be honest. A lot of people had comments of Poundland, Ruud Gullit. a lot of our fans were still a lot of our fans were still lamenting what Lo Celso still brings to this team. I'm coming to you on this. Dele, like, do you see a future with this guy? Because it seems as if I said this in a previous pod, it seems as if this club are flogging Dead Horse FC, where we flog and flog and flog and flog, expecting something different. Give me your thoughts on Dele, man.
Sell him.
Okay, next topic.
That's why I came to you, because I know your thoughts on the chat.
Hey, wait. Let me add to that quick before I get some abuse in my DM. Yeah. Look, I think the problem we have, especially with Spurs, not just with Spurs, but in general with football nowadays, is like, if we sold Dele and he went somewhere else and, you know, had a resurgence, people would be like, oh, you see, he's the manager and it's all that kind of stuff. Sometimes you just need to get away from the area that you're in. You know, some people have lived in London all their lives. They move to the countryside, living a good life, love it, peaceful. You know, sometimes you just need to get away. And that's where I feel like it is with Dele. I feel like we got the best we could out of Dele. I don't get the impression that he's interested enough in becoming the best he can potentially be. And this is not the first time I felt this way, because I felt this way when he was under Poch. And to be honest with you, it infuriates me, because we've had what? I'd say two very good seasons from Dele in the time he's been with us. But we've also had two seasons of crap, you know, with the last 18 months being easily the worst. And I know people are going to say, but he's barely played. And mate, I've seen him play in Europa League games, and I'm like, this guy's trash. Like, so it's either you wake up now and earn your contract or get sold. Because I have no problems with him going to West Ham and having a Jesse Lingard resurgence. Well done, clap for yourself. I don't care for that. Yeah, but I ain't got time for this whole man went away, had short hair, came back, is now Bob Marley. Make it make sense to me, bruv. How are you Bob Marley without the end product? So we're not gonna get no freaky little birds. We're not gonna get no I Shot the Sheriff. We're getting none of this. Yeah, we're getting no classics. But you got the hairdo. All right, well done. And clap for yourself. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you.
Oh my gosh.
You know what it is, yeah. Like, honestly, I still think he's a good player there. Like, but we are just not gonna see that player right now at Spurs. You've hit the nail on the head that a lot of not just our fans, but fans in general always get wrong, that if you sell a player and he thrives elsewhere, it was wrong for you to sell that player, as if to say you should ignore the fact that that player is not offering you what you need at this point in time in that position. And I think Dele unfortunately falls into that bracket, and he's not the only one as well, but I think we just need to be ruthless in the summer. Dave, I'm coming to you again on another player. Came on as a substitute, assisted, if you want to call it that, assisted Son's goal, even though it was a ridiculous goal from Sonny outside the edge of the area. Steven Bergwijn, I think that's his first assist in God knows how many weeks, months, I don't know. He's still on zero goals this season. Another player who, by all accounts, the fan base are like, if we get a good offer, we need to try and move him under summer. Where do you currently stand with Berg? You're in, yeah?
I still believe.
Yeah.
I've been on different platforms, and I've been talking about this guy because I see such a good player in him. I think he's young enough that we can give him another season at least. Let's think about it, right? Both him and Bale look a lot better when we're on the front foot. His confidence, I think, is shot because he's had to do a lot more work than should have been expected of such a young player. You know, playing under Mourinho, he was a defensive forward or whatever people were calling him. And, you know, every time he got a shot on goal, you can tell he's knackered. I'm not making excuses for him. He's a professional footballer. He should be able to take these chances. But I feel like the time under Mourinho really eroded his confidence. And we're seeing it now because he's come back in for, I think he came on in the final, didn't he? Or maybe a Southampton game. And even in the brief moments he's come on, he's looked sharper. He's getting into positions that he wasn't getting into before. Now, I actually thought he could have got a goal on Saturday or Sunday, whenever it was. There was one time, I think, I can't remember who had the ball. All they had to do is slip him in, and he was one-on-one. I mean, in the box, you'd hope he takes that chance. And I'd have been mad happy for him. I feel like we can give him another year. We haven't seen the best of him. Again, playing on the front foot makes such a difference to an attacking player, especially one that has his qualities. And, you know, when did he sign? He signed under Mourinho, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
So, you know, he's been here a year and a bit. He came in January. Can we look at the fact we've had disruptive seasons? Is that an issue? Pre-season, he hasn't got used to the league yet. He hasn't had that run. I don't know what the reasons are, but I would give him another chance. I still believe in Stevie Wonder.
Fair enough. Fair play. I think we need to watch the space with him in the summer because it'll be interesting. Me personally, I still think he's not a bad... I think there's something there, but in all honesty, it's just like, how many more of these players are we going to say, oh, he's young enough, so we give him another season. He's this, we give him another season. We just need you to produce, man. Like, I'm just like, I'm tired of having players who are, who should be good, who should be offering us more, who can offer us more, and they're just not. Like, Jack has been beating this drum for months, and I think I'm hearing it. Slowly, my head, you see that Jay-Z meme where it's like, yeah? Head bumping. I think my head's bumping to Jack's beat now, because yeah, he got the assist, but so what? Zero goals this season. Zero goals this season.
It's poor. I can't lie, it's poor.
If someone came to us this summer and gave us the amount that we paid for Steven Bergwijn back, the £24 million, made a bid, I'd sell him.
I'll take it for £24.
No. This guy
got no manners.
I didn't say that. I didn't come from me. It was Owen. You know what? That wasn't me.
I thought you were Owen.
I'm innocent. That's not me. It wasn't me that said it.
No, but honestly, I think ultimately we will do. In my head, I'm thinking we will do like a special once the season's over on like a keep or sell, because I feel like there's a lot of players that we need to assess in this team in terms of the justification for keeping them at the club, and whether the club will actually keep them or sell them. But I want to talk about an incident as well that happened in this game. John Fleck and VAR. Like, I hate speaking about VAR because it seems as if one week it's getting panned, the other week it's getting praised. But how on earth did John Fleck stay on that pitch? Can someone explain to me? How? How did that happen?
Mercy on Sheffield United.
I don't know, Owen. You know what's funny? I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah. I think the problem with VAR, again, is the people or the referees that are employed or chosen to implement it. So the human element is the most infuriating part of VAR, because I don't understand. I've seen... Okay, I can't believe I'm saying this because I absolutely hate their guts, but David Luiz gets sent off against Wolves, yeah, for what was considered to be a trick. To be fair, there's absolutely nothing he can do about it. The guy's back leg hits his shin pad, he goes down, it's a penalty, but he got sent off. All right, cool. You can't tell me Fleck can't move his foot out of the way of Lo Celso's head. Like, his head's big enough already. He stomps on man's head, yeah, nearly takes this guy's eye socket out, and what, no red card? Even if you're going to turn around and say to me it was an accident, that's still violent, bruv. Get him off the pitch. So I don't understand how you went to a video review and still came up with the decision of it was accidental, don't do nothing. Are you okay? Don't make sense. What if he broke his eye socket? Then what? Yeah. Say sorry, Pele.
I did tweet this. Someone could... Of course, there's a wider discussion in VAR. Someone could assume, though, as well, that... it might potentially be karma for Lo Celso, because I'm not sure if you don't remember, but because I remember that game away to Stamford Bridge last year, and I didn't get to see the replays until I got home. But like, at some point in the game, Lo Celso, I think it was on Aspilicueta, like he's purposely like trod on Aspilicueta's like shin or ankle or something like that, and they reviewed it on VAR, and he didn't get sent off for it. Like, they didn't send him off for it as well. So I don't know. I feel like you said, yeah, it's just the incompetence. The people using the technology are just so incompetent now. Something that you should see instantly in one take, you take extra long, 3, 4, 5 opportunities to see, and you still get it wrong. It makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me whatsoever, but I'm not going to sit here and bash VAR. We have better things to do with our time. Owen, I'm going to come to you on this one as well. Obviously, we're seeing the news this week. another manager linked, Graham Potter, Scott Parker, Ralph Ragnick, obviously Ten Hag has turfed us. How many managers are going to be linked now? And we are avid readers of Alistair Gold's pieces. Have you read his piece on the managerial merry-go-round and what his assessment is of all the names that have been linked?
Yeah, there was a particular emphasis on what's going on with the Italians who have been linked, where it seems to have been maybe just pushed by maybe agents or just fellow countrymen just to try and just to stir the pot, try and get them other jobs, etc., etc. The latest ones were Gasperini and Antonio Conte after Maurizio Sarri. It's been said that we've not even considered Sarri because he's too old, and I don't think another former Chelsea man would be appeased much by fans. Or it would appease the fans much. Antonio Conte, again, another ex-Chelsea one who I would entertain, but there doesn't seem to be any truth in it, even though Inter's finances seem to be in the mud. It doesn't seem like they can kick on from their title win whatsoever, although congratulations to them and Eriksen, whatever. Gasperini, yeah, I don't know too much about him, but I just know he plays very progressive, entertaining football with Atalanta. This Ralph Ragnick one confused me, though. There was a bit of German terminology to say that he was offered to us, but I don't know who's offering him to us. I don't know if there was even any consideration. I don't know if it's his agent just trying to get him the job because it's rumoured that he's actually open to it. God knows. last week, we obviously talked in depth about Ten Hag, and we even named the pod after him just for him to literally the next day find a contract with Ajax. And I was thinking at one point, like, oh, should we just change the name of the pod then? But no, it was too good. We well and truly got turfed. And then we've got the Premier League managers rumoured who a lot of the fans don't like. Brendan Rodgers, probably not viable. He would be my first choice. However, I definitely wouldn't say no to Graham Potter. I think he would definitely suit the way we'd like to play. It's just a case of, is he a big enough name to not only tame egos, will he be big enough or assertive enough to maybe be a pull in the transfer market? Because, yeah, it'll be a sticky one, but I mean, the transfer market's going to be sticky for us regardless. And then you've got Scott Parker, who's been really heavily rumoured. I don't think he's ready. I don't know if there's another dozen for me to cover. I'm sure there is.
There's loads, man.
What is it? Ryan Mason. A lot of fans seem to want him permanent manager after that 4-0 win now. I definitely don't think he's ready. It could be a myth for us this summer. It's been heavily rumoured that we're going to announce, ideally, a new manager before the end of the season. It doesn't look like anything's close, but as I say, I wouldn't say no to Potter at this point.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Dave, I'm gonna ask you both on this as well. Do you think that there is a tendency from our fan base to just accept what's given to them? Like, Ryan Mason win Mason. Spurs. Like, he's old with literally no experience of managing a club of our stature, apart from this interim spell that he's got right now. You want him to get the job full time. Where does that line of thinking come from? Can one of you lot explain to me, please?
It's passion and desire crew, isn't it?
Romanticism, because he's one of our own.
It's the passion and desire crew. It's the same crew that lets Lamella stay in our club for 8 years because he has a couple of slide tackles and scores 2 goals a year, or whatever. It's ridiculous, and I've kind of switched off actually after Erik ten Hag dumped us without us even. He didn't return our phone calls. after he just turned around and went, you know what, I heard your podcast, I'm not coming. For me, I'm just kind of like, you know what, I don't even know who we're going after next. But this Ryan Mason malarkey, as much as, yeah, we saw the 4-0, we were playing against the Championship side, right? They're already relegated. What we're trying to do, we're trying to get into a position where we can compete in the bigger games, all right? So you're looking at your Chelsea's, your Arsenal's, your Man City's, yeah? You're looking at, can we, you know, away, like Ferguson used to say, Alex Ferguson, you know, the great manager, you say, away from home, you draw, you win the home game, you get 4 points from your rivals, right? Can we get a manager who can give us a style of play that brings out the best in our players to do that? You want to go after a manager who picks Winks over Ndombele. That's not it for me. I'm sorry. So people are just kind of going off this passion thing. He's one of our own, academy boy, all that kind of rubbish. But that's not good enough. And if you want to be moving up the table, you've got to come better than that. Do you know what I mean? And Ryan Mason's not going to get it done. As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Looking at the pool of options that we have available now, then, yeah, I know. Whether we or not, it's going to be a never-ending discussion on our pod until a new manager through the doors. So, obviously, you've been quite opinionated in the chat on Spurs, like Spurs needing to aspire for more. Give me your detractors on an appointment like a Graham Potter, then, because I've seen some of the names we've been linked with. Marcelino, apparently, Alistair Gold says he's not realistic. Of course, Owen touched on Antonio Conte, who is far from the realms of possibility for Spurs. So it seems as if we are going to have to go for one of these managers that come with a great element of risk. What's your take on a Graham Potter or a Graham Potter level type manager then?
See, the thing is, yeah, it's harsh to insult Potter's achievement, say in the Swedish, I think it's the Swedish league, if I'm correct, what he did with that team, taking them from tier four to the top division and winning the league. The thing is, and this is, I know people are going to say, but look at the teams he's beaten, all this kind of stuff. Look, I've heard fans say if Potter comes to Spurs, he's going to have better players to deal with, and they'll be able to do things that Brighton are unable to do in that sense. And I keep telling people that is not how football works. It just doesn't. Yeah, it's not a computer game. Yeah, you don't just go from one team to another and transfer exactly what you did with one team to another and it works. Pep's Man City team played very different, whether people notice this or not, played very different to his Bayern Munich team. And his Bayern Munich team played way different to his Barcelona team. Even though there was elements that is linked throughout all three teams, the three teams all played differently. If we got somebody like Potter in, we have to accept the fact that this is another project. And we're not at that point no more. Yeah? And that's kind of the curse of us growing in the last 5 to 6 years. That's the curse that you get. Once you grow and you become one of the big teams, or as you know, Sky Sports likes to package it up, the big six, we don't have room for projects now. If we're going to have somebody that's going to come in with a project, he's got to be a big name. He's got to be about that life. He's got to be something like Pep. He's got to be like, all right, cool. This ain't really a project, yeah, but I'm here for 3 years. And in those 3 years, I'm looking to win the Prem by year two. That's the point that we need to start thinking. Now, if we're going with a Potter, we're not saying that Potter is not going to be able to achieve top six and all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that. Yeah, but we have to acknowledge that this guy is literally starting with a blank canvas. And the question we have to answer as fans is, are we willing to go through that again? And the answer from my point of view is no. And that's why I'm like, I'm not going to accept somebody like Potter who, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, hasn't managed a club that's got to the top 10 at the very least, hasn't managed a club that's made it to a final at the very least, hasn't managed a club that's even participated in the group stages of the Champions League. At least those three things have to be achieved for a manager to even come to Spurs. At least, I don't care what league you've done it in, you have to have at least achieved one of those three things that I just mentioned. He hasn't done none of those. So why should I accept that he should come to my club and tell Bell, hey, I want you to play like Mope? Get out of here. I ain't got time for that.
Because the bigger names aren't viable.
It's true.
That's the reality.
Owen is right. The bigger names aren't viable. And we're going to take... We are going to have to take a big element of risk. Potter is... Listen, at his level... Potter's a very talented coach. I'm of the opinion that Brendan Rodgers isn't English, he's Scottish, but as far as English...
Northern Irish.
Oh, sorry. Northern Ireland. Northern Irish, sorry. I thought you were Scottish. Sorry, my bad.
It's obvious.
No, it's Moisey that's Scottish. But anyway, I think with Potter, talented coach... Footballing structure is right. When you look at Brighton, their shape, in and out of possession, the football they play, and his ability to maintain his style no matter who comes into their team. Like in terms of his ideals, philosophy, and how he sets out his team, he is very much a manager that I like. That those characteristics I want to see in our next manager. But yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. It may be too much too soon for a guy like Graham Potter because the expectations... Sorry, go on.
Yeah, sorry, no, because you know what? One thing I will say, and this is because I have been very harsh on Potter, you know, I apologise. You know, I'm trying to be nice to him. You know, he's a nice lad. But I don't see no different in terms of like the way Brighton played to how Bournemouth played the first few years they came up. You know, I love the way Bournemouth played when they first came up. You know, that free-spirited way of playing. You know, they weren't really afraid of who they came up against. I really appreciate that. But that's all good for teams at that level. Yeah, we're talking about Spurs. Yeah, like, I know people are going to be like, yeah, but what if you won? Big man, shut up. We're talking about Spurs, yeah? Like, regardless of whether people want to admit it or not, yeah, when you say Tottenham Hotspurs, that rings bells in the Premier League. Yeah, it don't ring bells like certain teams, but it still rings bells. You think, all right, cool. These are the players that they've had over there. You need to be doing some stuff, serious stuff. Like, it's just not going to cut it for me. If I see, like, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I try to be nice, innit? But if Potter comes to Spurs, I'm booing him every single week. Every week. Okay, you think I'm joking?
The thing is, yeah.
Every weekend.
I'm drawing a lot of parallels right now to when AVB left and we had interim, one of our own from the youth in Sherwood, and then we were linked heavily with quite big names at the time, like Laudrup and Louis van Gaal. I've done a poll on the Spurs Touchline account, like, okay, 2014 summer, who did you want, Louis van Gaal or Pochettino? Louis van Gaal won quite heavily. I think too much emphasis is being put on like a sexy name. I think if someone like Potter was to get in, like I rate his Brighton side more than the Bournemouth team, in the sense like I know they're finishing like way below Bournemouth sides, but Bournemouth didn't really exert control over games like Brighton I see do. I just think people like Trossard and Mbappe are just arse. But yeah, I think it'll be a case of if Potter gets in, he's on the training ground with the boys, then it's going to be a case of real recognise real. The players are going to respond to that. And I think, and this would be an outlandish, I think if we have a really good clear out and a few additions, and the clear out has to be heavy. It has to be heavy. Mourinho, please, I'm on my knees. Please get Lamora in for Roma because I know you like them. And Roma are probably going to back you, so you might as well, please. With a really heavy clear out. If we manage to keep Kane and Son, even retain Bale, sign a few decent defenders at least, then we could easily finish top four under Potter. Easily.
I don't know about easily.
Let me just say, I don't think it'll be easy, but let me say that. So you're right. And I was just thinking that there are parallels when we got Poch, right? There are parallels when we got Poch. But here's the thing. Because Poch hadn't managed at that level before, is that the reason why when we got to semi-finals and finals or whatever, he got found out by more experienced managers? Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, Potter may be able to get us to play good football and rare, but we want a manager who can help us progress and start winning these games that we're losing in the latter stages of competitions.
Like Mourinho.
We fought Mourinho.
Mourinho got us to a final. I know. It's harsh. It's funny to say it. And like, all right, cool. We've had an awful season, and he's gone yet. But you just have to call a spade a spade. He got us to a final. Like in his first full season, he got us to a final. Yes, Poch did the same. And what I would say about the whole Poch thing is, I wanted Poch. When that time came up, I wanted Poch. Yeah, but the difference between Poch and Potter for me was, I looked at Poch's Southampton team and I was like, this team shouldn't be where it is. Mm. And he's coming there. So I was like, all right, cool. Maybe he could come and do something with us. I knew with Louis van Gaal, it was a bigger name, but, you know, and he would have probably a better pull in the market, but he would want a specific team to play his specific style, which is 3-5-2 predominantly. And I didn't think that would necessarily suit us. So I wanted Poch. This time around, I don't want Potter. Like, well done what you did down south. Like, cool, that's nice. Keep yourself down there, bro. Don't come
it's
up.
It's not bad down here, you know.
don't come around here, please.
It's interesting because, listen, we can debate it until the cows come home, but we are gonna have to. It seems as if there's gonna be whichever manager we get. Based on the pool we have available, it seems like that manager is not going to be the majority's cup of tea. Whoever it is, it seems as if there's going to be something that we're going to have to endure about that manager. I just hope it's the best of the bunch that we have available now, because Owen is right. It's not all about the big name, but I'm here. I'm with y'all. I need experience. I need XP. I need experience of you, not even fair enough. Like, of course, we want to win stuff. I need experience of you managing a side whose expectations are, if you don't get top four or even top five, if you don't progress in the last stages of the European competition, you're done. And I think my worry with a manager like Graham Potter is, yes, he's talented. Yes, his Brighton side play good football. Yes, they're organised. Yes, defensively, they are a lot more secure than some of these other sides who play with the same freedom that they play with. But ultimately, there's no pressure on him now. If Brighton get relegated, he's not getting sacked. If Brighton stay where they are, he's not getting sacked. If Brighton move up, he's not getting sacked. There is ultimate security at his job. There's no pressure. So the expectation for me is nowhere near as great. And my worry is, can he make that jump up? I just think it's too much too soon. Look at Brendan Rodgers. He made a jump up to Liverpool and he was excellent in one of the seasons. But in other seasons, he was a bit subpar and he had to literally go to Scotland to patch up his reputation. For me, it's more about the name. It's less about the name. It's more and more about, can you handle everything that this job's gonna come with? And I don't think Potter can handle all of that right now. I just don't. I don't know. What do you think? What do you look for?
Can Potter go on loan? Can we buy him and send him out on loan to RB Leipzig, and then come back a season later? Can managers do that?
For me, he's just the best, like, kind of viable name that I know of. Maybe other than Ralf Rangnick, like, I'd have him as well for sure. But I don't even know what his experience is like. I think he's had a pretty much he's been at a similar level. Maybe like Hoffenheim and Leipzig finished a bit higher up, but in terms of trophies and stuff, I haven't heard much about it. I don't know. I maintain like Brendan would have been my first choice. Like I just wouldn't know any other better viable names than.
Yeah, it's true. You're right.
Also, like, I don't know.
You know,
anyone else got any names?
No, you know what I don't like about Brendan. The thing I don't like about Brendan, and this is going to sound really harsh, because to be honest with you, I defend managers more than I defend players. But I don't like the fact that the majority of his teams tend to tail off in the second half of the season. I hate it.
Yeah.
I absolutely hate it. And I don't understand why. I don't know what's gone wrong from the first half of the season to the second half of the season. It's just literally free-falling. And I'm not going through that with Spurs. I'm not doing that.
I'd only say that last season he had a stupid amount of injuries. I think this season it was similar. And then I felt like he adjusted quite well. He changed the system to accommodate the senior men, Kelechi and Iheanacho, and they're back to form. I'll give him credit for that, because like I felt for a few weeks that they might actually slip out the top four. But yeah, fair play. He managed to adjust quite well, which was another tick in the box for me. Like, I want a manager who would be able to adjust if things weren't going the way. This is why I didn't want Maurizio Sarri. Like, I think he's a viable name who ticks a lot of boxes. But yeah, I'll credit Brendan for that.
Yeah, I think with Brendan, he would have been the outstanding choice to be our manager. But he's just not realistic. Not realistic in the slightest. But anyway, let's leave the manager talk to a side, and we'll pick it back up next week when we inevitably hear a new name linked and no manager appointed. I want to talk about our club, because I'm not sure if you lot have seen the news today. 10,000 fans confirmed to be let back into the stadium for the game, for our final home game of the season against Aston Villa. Now, Daniel Levy is a guy, and Enoch, they're a mob that have been certainly not everyone's best friends in the last couple of weeks. And I don't know if you lot have seen the prices, but I applied today, and so did a lot of other people. £60 a pop. £60 a pop.
For one game.
For one game. £60 a pop for the final home game of the season. To put it into context, the highest Arsenal are charging for theirs, and they have exorbitant fees, is £35. I think Liverpool charging £24. A few others charging, I can't even remember. And bear in mind, this isn't even £60 to sit in the prime seats of the stadium. This is £60 for anywhere, any location in the stadium. So I want to talk about our owners, because it seems as if what's the word I'm looking for? They have no awareness of the situation that they're in now. Like, with the heat that they've had in the Super League, is this the right way to go about advertising our last home game of the season? I don't know. Owen, Dave?
Man, I mean, it's very cheeky. It's really just like second highest is £35 and we're 60. Wow. Okay. Arsenal, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, but yeah, it's a pretty tone deaf move considering there's a supporters trust literally banging at their doors to get the whole board out, which is a protest which has been gathering a lot of weight as of recently as well. I can't defend that at all. Wouldn't even try to. It's I can't really say much other than it's just extremely tone deaf. It's scandal. Extremely tone deaf at the moment.
Scandal. Dave, I'm coming to you next on this.
I didn't know that before.
I want you to give me your thoughts on that as well. And then I want us to quickly touch on the news about the boards. I mean, the supporters trust sort of like 6-point plan to our board. So give me your views on Enoch, and then give me your views on the supporters trust.
I think by now we know what they're about, isn't it? It's about money for them. And this kind of move, it shows that, you know, they built the stadium to get the revenue from the stadium. That's a massive part of the club's kind of, I don't want to say day to day, but that's a massive part of why, you know, the stadium was brought to bear. The revenue that it generates, that's what they're looking for. So they get a one-off shot this season to make some money before, you know, the summer, whatever. I mean, it's only £600,000, but we don't know where that money's going. But they need, they're going to look to get any bit of money out of us. Do you know what I mean? So it's not surprising. Do I want a change? Yes. I would love a change of ownership. I think not even just because they've done this or they've done that. I just think the club needs a fresh impetus. And I think that can only come from top down. You know, we can change managers, change players, but there's something in the water, as it were, And I just think we just need a fresh impetus, you know, new faces, new voices, just to really galvanize the team. Now, if it's someone worth, you know, 10 billion, 15 billion, you know, then great. You know, if we get a cash rich sheikh lying around in the UAE, who's ready just to make it happen, make it rain. I'm sure Yao will be the first one there with the cheerleading pom poms. Sheikh Abdul, whatever, you know, into the club. I can see Yao now. But no, you know, that would be the dream. But I think whoever comes in, and hopefully someone does come in, I'm ready to see a change and just that fresh impetus. And I know the Supporters Trust have got their views on what should happen next. Kudos to them for even trying to put things together. But I don't think a lot of their things that they go for are realistic.
Yeah.
And there's no level of accountability that they can really find. Do you know what I mean? So it's just a bit, you know, shot in the dark.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, shot in the dark. That's what it is. Yeah, I'm coming to you to finish up on this one as well. I shouldn't laugh because, honestly, they mean well and they do care about the club, which is more than we can say for some of our owners right now. But, I mean, some of those proposals, let's talk about it, because inviting fans to be part of the selection process for non-playing staff? Really?
Take it away.
Hey, look, I'm trying so hard not to laugh, yeah, but some of the points they put for their proposal, I don't know if it was like for banter sake, because it must have been. Like if they genuinely believe that they should be allowed to do this, yeah, then they'll, because look, every fan base, every team has, you know, certain fans that, you know, make some outlandish claims, and they just can't run. So I don't think I'd want to put power in the hands of. I'm so sorry. I can't trust them.
Not be sorry.
I can't. I'm sorry. Like, I can't trust them. It's an absolute no. It's an absolute no. So
big facts.
Regarding our board, yeah, Enoch has to go. I'm with that. Like, look, thank you for the stadium. Thank you for the music. You know, like Abba used to say. But pick out, bruv. Hey, Levy, come on down, innit? You know what time it is. No more sentimental things. We're done out here, bruv. Like, I've got no care for Enoch whatsoever. They've done a great job building up the profile of the club, you know, giving us a new stadium, broken our transfer record. All right, yeah, cool. I'm happy with all of this stuff. But essentially, football or footballing club should be looking to win trophies. It shouldn't be just a business that makes profit, you know. All right, fine, there's a lot of big clubs that are in debt and in major debt, and we get that, and I understand that they wouldn't want their business to be in debt. But at the same time, you have to also look on the competitive side of things, and you have to look to want to be in the running for trophies. And I don't think Enoch as a board have done that, and that's why we're at this point where we are as fans.
100.
We've had enough. In regards to the protests, and the price, or the ticket price, should I say, with the protests, I don't believe that the protest is going to bang. I'll be heavily surprised if it does, because our last protest was a concert. So I'm not too sure what these men are going to do this time. I hope there's flares in it. If there's flares and, you know, at least a couple of chipping boxes thrown, then you know, you're really serious. You know, I can respect. Look, my man that owns chicken, just supply a couple chickens and me, so we can dash it, you know, the cockerel and, you know, chicken, let the club hold that a little bit. But nah, I'm not too sure on how the protest is going to go down. I hope it sends a very serious message. And regarding the price of the tickets for the final home game, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm surprised it wasn't more. And the reason I say that is because we've got a stadium to pay. we've not had no fans in the stadium for like what is it coming up to nearly what, just over a year or something like that. So yeah, they need bare money. So I'm not gonna be surprised that they're charging £60. I would, to be honest with you, when I heard that tickets were available, I thought it was gonna be between 80 and 100, you know, and they were gonna offer you at least a Foster's. But I guess they've just priced it at £60 and hope that you spend the extra 20 on your bill.
Foster's. I don't even drink that nasty shit.
Foster's is a horrible drink. That is like lead.
Yeah, okay, well, that's... Oh, sorry, Villarreal nearly scored. But that's... I guess that's what we... That's let's leave it there with the Spurs talk for this week. I think the protest will be interesting as well, because I think it's probably one we should talk about more next week. Funnily enough, I'm siding more with you and Jack now and Enoch. Yeah, I used to sit on the fence, but you just have to look at where the club is heading, and you just have to look at the incompetent decisions that we've had to endure the last couple of years. And then when you weigh in all these factors, it's like, do you really trust these people to do the right thing anymore? Ask yourself that question, and if the answer is
not at all,
if the answer is no, then what are you really supporting? So I'm going to be at that protest, but I think it's probably one that we should definitely touch on next week's episode.
Are you going there with a flair?
I don't know.
Maybe on the pitch, recreating goals.
Listen, we've got probably 5 minutes left, so let's wrap up with a preview. Of course, we got the early kickoff, Leeds on the Saturday, 12:30. What are our expectations for this game? I'll start with you on this one, Owen. What are you? I know you gave a scoreline last week that that didn't bang. For thank God it didn't. So let's hear your score predictions this week.
I'm not even that invested in what the result's going to be, because I do want us to kind of just try and still landscape for the next manager to take over. I want to see an improvement in front foot performances, but I think he's probably going to go with a largely unchanged lineup to Sheffield United after he's seen it bang, after he's seen fans call for him to be full-time manager. So yeah, I think he's going to go with an unchanged team and we'll probably get overrun. And I think, do you know what? I'll go with a score draw, 2-2.
Yeah, what are you going for?
I'm going with a 3-1 victory, Spurs. I honestly, again, don't think that we're going to keep a clean sheet. In fact, I haven't thought that we'll keep a clean sheet all season. But Leeds, whether people like to admit it or not, are defensively woeful. I say this now and they probably keep a clean sheet against us, knowing our luck. But they just are susceptible to a lot of attacks. And I feel like we may be able to get one or two goals. It might be a 2-1, but I think we might be able to nick a third. So I'm going to go with a 3-1 victory.
Dave?
2-2. I think I'm going to draw this one. yeah, again, don't see a clean sheet. And I just think, we saw it at the weekend, you know, when Sheffield United brought on, is it Sanderberg in the middle, when they tightened up their midfield, then our midfield got a little bit panicky. And until, you know, we got that second goal, it wasn't necessarily a foregone conclusion that we were going to keep a clean sheet and not concede chances. And I think Leeds have a few players who can maybe make things happen going forward, and that might be to our detriment. I don't see... I think he is going to go with the same lineup, unfortunately. I would love to see Ndombele, because I think, again, when you're playing against a team who presses, Ryan Mason, you need to play a press-resistant midfielder. Ndombele. Not Winks and not Lo Celso. Ndombele. But we'll see. Knowing Ryan Mason, he might have seen something special in Sissoko this week, and we'll see him in our lineup. But yeah, I think 2-2.
God. Yeah, I'm actually siding with you, Dave, on this as well. I think it's going to end 2-2 as well. I don't think we're going to win. I don't trust the defence as well. And funnily enough, I think Leeds in recent weeks have actually improved defensively. Like, they've not really been conceding as much goals as they have done. And I think their loss to Brighton last week away from home was like their first loss in like 5-6 games. I just think at home, I saw the performance against Liverpool. I saw the performance against Man City. I think they've got enough in the tank to get a point against us, even with how sort of open they tend to be at times. But it will be an interesting game.
They'll definitely be up for it. They'll want to beat Spurs. You know what I mean? They'll be like, you know what, a big six type club or whatever. They'll want to ask out, you know.
100. And listen, how many teams have had our head on sticks all season. So, boy, it might be another one come 5 p.m. on Saturday. Who knows? Let's see. Anyway, lads, it's been a pleasure chopping it up with you lot. Folks, if you're still listening, make sure you're following us on all socials. That's Spurs_touchline on Twitter, Spurs_touchline on Instagram. If you haven't subscribe to us on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the Touchline Fracker YouTube channel. Otherwise, make sure you join the Discord as well, where we're always there, we're always engaging with fellow fans, and we always cover all the live games. So, peace out, and we'll be back next week.
On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. A great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier!